Blog Talk Radio.
I'm good, man. I'm doing fantastic, man, on this wonderful Wednesday evening, man. How about yourself?
Man, I'm doing fantastic, man. Ready to dive into the show. I know there's a lot going on out there, man. Most of the people are going to be told in the empire, but at the same time, man, we want to get our show off, man. We've been trying to be more consistent and bring you guys a good show every week where we're trying to do some new things, and we're going to get back to what we used to do, of course, when I first started the show, which is just give some good advice at the beginning of the show on setting goals, keeping positive attitude, and ways for us to step out and just become the person that, you know we can be if we just really stay focused. So today I want to talk to you a little bit about goal setting. And it's so important for us to set goals. A lot of times we don't accomplish the things that we want to accomplish simply because we haven't done the proper things when it came to setting goals. So first of all, I want to talk to you about just choosing the right goals. We've got to find some middle ground between, of course, aiming too high and not aiming high enough, all right? Of course, aiming high is a great motivator, all right? If you don't feel like a goal is attainable, you know, then, of course, you're going to soon, you know, stop trying, you know. But at the same time, we want to aim high, and we want to try to keep that enthusiasm, of course, as we go towards that goal. So, of course, we want to aim high, but at the same time, we want to basically create some type of goal that's going to immediately produce some results that make us keep going. So although we might be aiming high, we want to get some small goals along the way so that we continue to just make sure that we're always going after that goal and we're keeping our commitments, all right? Some goals, of course, are going to be continuous. So, of course, you know, you might not meet all the guidelines, but at the same time, you know, we want to continue to keep that a formal goal. Now, how do we keep it a formal goal? The first thing we're going to do is write it down. You got to make it official. And if you're going to write it down, not only write it down, but maybe post it on a Facebook page, post it on Instagram, or whatever social media outlet you might be using, so that we can kind of hold ourselves accountable to other people. Sometimes that's all it takes, is being accountable to somebody else and somebody else looking over your shoulder to say, hey, you know what, you said you were going to do X, Y, Z, I want to see you do it. And people encouraging you along the way. I know a lot of times many of my Facebook friends, they do a lot of things that that they post on social media, like losing weight or whatever the case may be. And, of course, you know, people are always posting encouraging words, trying to get them to continue to do what they're doing, all right? So make it formal. Write it down and put it in a place where you're always going to see it, all right? Maybe you want to let a friend know about it so that they can hold you to it. So get them to ask you questions about it, help you maybe fill in gaps or maybe spot any flaws in your plan. So make it formal, all right? Next, we're going to devise a plan, all right? That's vital. You got to devise a plan. Without a plan, your goal is really nothing but a wish. You know, write a summary of that goal. Just kind of include little details of what you want to do, what kind of timing you want to set in place so that you know, hey, I'm supposed to be here at this particular time, all right? Decide where to begin and then make that detailed step-by-step of all the major tasks that needed to be done to achieve that goal, all right? Now, if in doubt, all you got to do is work backwards, from the final result and then find out where it is you need to start, all right? Stick to it, but at the same time, you got to stay flexible. If something is not working, whether you're losing weight or whatever the case may be, if something is not working, then you've got to try to find something that does work. I'll give you a prime example. I've been trying to help my daughter with her allergies through making different shakes and things like that. Now, a couple of shakes that I made, they weren't getting the job done, and I can tell. So I've been switching it up. I found a new formula of fruit and things like that that seem to really be helping. So what I'm doing is trying to make sure that I continue that and make sure that she is continuously taking the new flexible substance, we'll call it, and it's helping her to get better, all right? And then last but not least, you want to regularly reassess where you're at. Are you getting closer to your goal, or are you getting further away from your goal? So please make sure that you're reassessing your goal and then, you know, continue to set those priorities and do those things that are priorities within your goal setting. So, Q, you got anything on that?
Hey, D, you know what? I want to piggyback off that, man. I know one thing we often talk about that you mentioned, man, is having friends that keep you accountable. You know, man, you and I both work out, man, but just through circumstances, man, I haven't been able to really hit some of my workout goals just from, you know, time management, man, just being really busy, you know, with our corporate jobs and all the other things that we do. But, man, one thing that I appreciate was you saying, hey, man, hey, no excuses, bro. Let's get to it. You know, what are excuses, you know? And then, truthfully, man, I don't have them. I mean, I can't continue to say, oh, this is coming up or that's coming up or this meeting or that meeting, because, you know, I can't do that. So I think you're right, man, by setting goals, by taking an idea and writing it down. Again, I like writing it on paper, but I know a lot of people now, I mean, everything is kept in their phones, and I often have a notepad stuck in my phone that will allow me to keep those ideas and refresh myself whenever I need them. But I think, man, also one thing we need to do when we're setting goals is remember to challenge ourselves. Because a lot of time, man, when we set goals, we'll set goals that we know that we can attain. And the real scary goals are the ones that we need to know, hey, I might not be able to get to. I mean, I know I can do it for sure, but it's going to be something that's pretty difficult. You know, we set easy goals, and sometimes that makes it to where it's not really, you know, it's fulfilling because, you know, in the back of your mind, you know, recesses of your mind, you know that you can do it. So, man, just set some unrealistic goals, set some attainable goals, and then set some really simple goals so you can kind of get the ball rolling and keep that momentum. But I think that was a great word today, man. I appreciate it, Spec.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Well, we're trying to get back into that, and this is something I think that a lot of our listeners got something out of, and we want to continue to help our listeners get something out of this show. You know, the idea of this show is to help people to, of course, we want to help people to, you know, we want people to be entertained, excuse me, but at the same time, we want to make you think. Not only do we want to make you think, but we want to give you some ideas that and some things that you can use in your life that might help you to get on to a better life. I know for me, many years ago, listening to or reading Attitude is Everything by Keith Harrell, I talk about that all the time, but it was such a good book. And it gave me so many things that I was able to use that now I fall back on when I'm getting out of line. I fall back on those things. And attitude really is everything. And so we want to help people to develop a fantastic attitude and an attitude that makes them that allows them to do the things they want to do. So we're going to go into a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Oh, no. You're running out of time, and you need your print job done, and you need it done right. Ah, what's next? It's simple. Send it to JoJo Monster Graphics in Venice. They'll get it done fast and right the first time. Call JoJo Monster Graphics at 310-584-1212 to schedule an appointment. That number again is 310-584-1212. And always remember, if it's on paper, we can do it.
We were getting it in there. Did you see me? I was dropping it.
Mm-hmm. But girl, I am starving, and there ain't nothing open but the same old stuff in L.A. Half of it's nasty, and the rest, well, we just won't go there.
But the serving spoon is still cracking after dark, right?
Yes, every Friday and Saturday night, 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. Oh, and don't forget the normal hours, Monday through Saturday from 7 to 3 p.m., except on Sundays from 9 until 5.
So you know what we're about to do, right?
What?
Get on over to the serving spoon. They're serving up everything. The catfish, the pancakes, those waffles, spoon potatoes, and the best grits I've ever had. Chicken wings and all types of sausages.
Ooh, yeah.
Open for the late night crowd every Friday and Saturday night from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. Serving up the best breakfast around for over 30 years. 1403 Sentinel Avenue is rocking, girl, here at Inglewood. 310-412-3927. The Serving Spoon. There's no better breakfast. It's always been love at first bite.
Follow The Serving Spoon on Twitter and Facebook, or check them out at theservingspoon.net and see The Serving Spoon's great reviews on Yelp.
All right, and we're back. So today we've got a lot of stories to get into, so much going on out there. But the first story that we have to get into, of course, is the Ahmed's clock story. I just think this is probably one of the most interesting stories that I've read in a while, not only because it's something that, of course, has ignited controversy, but it's really made people think on, well, you see how people think on a variety of different levels. I mean, you see the people who think just on the surface of things, and then you see the people who are really looking at this whole situation as as something totally different, okay? So if you don't know, the story is out of Irving, Texas, and it's about a young man by the name of Ahmed Muhammad. Okay, he's a student at Irving MacArthur High School, and basically he was arrested because he brought to school what he said was a homemade clock, but to, I guess, school officials initially looked as though it might have been something different. Q, have you seen anything about this story? Have you read anything about it? Or, you know, have you developed that, or have you determined what your opinion of it is?
Hey, do you know what I have, man? And just to give them a little background, man, this this occurred well over a week and a half ago. It occurred on the 19th of September. I'm sorry, not on the 19th, on the 14th of September. And you had a young man, and again, his name is Ahmed Mohammed. So let's keep that in the context. He's a brown-skinned, he's actually an African, of Sudanese birth, who actually is Muslim. He goes to school in Texas. He's been there for a while. The kid is a science geek, is a self-proclaimed nerd. I mean, he's into science, he's into building things, he's into robotics. Well, what he wanted to do was take a clock to school. He said that on Sunday he made a clock, and he wanted to take it to school to, you know, really impress his teacher. So he was just like we were just talking about, man, setting goals. Well, he made a goal that, you know, he wants to impress his teacher. So he said on Sunday night, he spent about 20 minutes, and he rigged up a clock, and he brought it to school to show his engineering teacher. And he shows the science teacher his clock. And the teacher then proceeds to tell him, hey, I wouldn't show that to anybody else if I were you. And so when he does that, he then goes to his next period of class. The clock's alarm goes off in an English class. Teacher asks what it is, says bring it up, you disrupt the class, blah, blah, blah. Kid goes to the next class and is then met by the principal and a couple of police officers and told to come in. He's been interrogated, you know, about his parents' consent. He, you know, explained to the people on every time when asked that the clock is not a bomb. But he was, you know, he was repeatedly asked, are you bringing a bomb to school? Is this a fake bomb? Is it a real bomb? All these different things. And the young man was very steadfast. He was saying that that's a clock. Well, he was arrested. And the telltale thing that really bothered me was that he was arrested with a NASA t-shirt on. So here's a kid that we're talking about that is trying to pursue a goal, a dream, to be a scientist, a tinkerer, someone like that. And here he is, because he tries to come to school and show off an invention, he's actually being accosted and arrested. So I just think that, you know, truthfully, man, you have to go have an opinion. You know, I do, man. I think it's a sad state of affairs when kid can try to impress his teacher, and it's thought because of his religion and his complexion that he could be a bomber, that he could be a suicide. So I just think, again, man, it's one of those things that the kid was, you know, he was profiled, man. He was stereotyped. I mean, it is exactly what it is.
So if you take a look at the case just all the way around, Irvin Mayer came out and said that basically she appeared on Glenn Beck's talk show, and she said that it looked a lot like something other than what it was, and that was initially what the problem was that the, first of all, the everything hasn't been released from the school. And I think society is really gotten to the point where we just seem to form opinions and we don't have all the information, and it really makes all of us look bad simply because we're trying to, you know, talk about something. We really don't have all the information to it. Now, the mayor came out and basically she appeared on the Glenn Beck show and said that the family should let the school release the info, which they really should. I mean, you're talking about a kid who's, you know, if he's done what he said he's done, which is just created a clock from scratch, you know, that's something that we should be celebrating, of course. I think that, you know, definitely, I think that, you know, just really based on his background, it's really kind of tough for him to come to school with something like that and people not look at him like, hey, man, what's going on? And I get it. Yeah, he's a kid. I get it that, you know, we should be celebrating these things. But in the day and time that we live in, it's just important that we all be on the same page. So it's unfortunate that he was faced with, you know, all of the negative stereotypes that he was faced with. You know, it's just, but to deny that we don't live in a world where we all have to be extremely cautious about the things that walk into school, especially the school doors. When we talk about any doors, we really have to, you know, really be especially concerned with anything walking in a school. So, you know, now, of course, you know, on the Glenn Beck show, you know, they advanced the theory that in part you know, this could have been part of an orchestrated conspiracy. That's something I think that's still kind of out there. But at the same time, there was some type of investigation that was conducted by the city of Irving, and they basically came out and said, hey, you know what, they determined that the student did not intend to cause alarm. So, you know, with them coming out and saying that, but you never know. Hey, so many people, when cities get pressure put on them, say, do this, do that, you just never know what angle they're coming from. Now, this kid's gotten over $15,000 worth of academic scholarships, and hey, you know what? If that kid created that clock and it was just a genuine effort to, just kind of advance his position in the school and do things like that, hey, I'm all for it. So we just got to make sure that was a deal. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, you've had a couple of people look at the clock and say, hey, time out. We've been fooled. And there was a guy by the name of Anthony, and I guess it's DePascal. He's the webmaster for Art Voice, and he's the one that exposed the circuitry behind Muhammad's clock. And basically, he says this was a factory-produced clock. And so I'm kind of wondering, you know, what's really going on. I really kind of wish more of, you know, I guess whatever information the school has was released, so that we can all determine, you know, what really happened. So anything else, Q, on that one?
Actually, D, I think a lot of it, man. If you think about it, bro, like, what are we really saying? I mean, he's a kid. Has he done anything to? If he hasn't done anything that would make you think something is wrong with him, or that he has a tendency to have a bomb, you can't just assume that he has a bomb. And I think that's the part of it. He's a kid, so he put together parts of various things. So I don't, just because this guy's a webmaster, what makes him think that it's suddenly some type of, what makes him an authority on it? And I think that that's
the problem. Well, no, it was, he exposed the circuitry behind it, and there were several technical aspects of it that were brought out, and basically he was just saying that at the end of the day, these were not parts that would have been used by someone building a clock from scratch that would have purchased those parts from a store or something like that. And, you know, I'm really hoping that this was an honest attempt by this kid to, you know, bring something to the school that, you know, was his own invention. But, man, I mean, you know, you can't, it's just like, you know, me trying to deny who I am. I mean, I just can't, I don't do things because it may be perceived in a certain way. You know, it's just the world we live in. I don't do that. You wouldn't advise your son to dress in a certain way and do certain things because he would be unfairly ridiculed, basically just because of the fact that he's a young black male. So we really have to think about that. And I wish that something was going on. I wish it would have been a school fair. And, like, it was, like, some type of electronics contest, and he was bringing it at that time. But I don't know. It just seemed as though he just showed up at school with a clock, you know, and that looked like a hoax bomb, because that's what the mayor referred to it as. And so since now, I haven't seen any of the pictures, I don't know what they look like.
Well, I think the thing about the mayor, that just because the mayor said it doesn't mean much, the mayor actually had come out in the summer, man, and had some anti-Islamic statements that she made. I think it's a very slippery slope, because if you start saying, you know, I read a lot of comments, man, that people were posting about various articles about, man, and I think it's a sad state of affairs that people say, well, he was wrong for bringing it to school without getting permission. Like, dude, he's a scientist, and he's trying to show someone who would be an authority on the subject to a certain extent, his teacher, that, hey, look at what I can do. Look at how I'm taking the things that you're teaching us, and I'm applying them in real life. Like, people bring all kinds of things to school. You know, they may make people in the music industry, they bring mixtapes to school. You know, or now they bring songs that they made. So what's any different than this kid bringing a clock? And it's a sad state of affairs when you got people out here, adults, saying, well, you brought a clock, could be a bomb. And, I mean, there was talk at one point of saying that they were going to charge him with bringing a bomb. They never going to charge him with bringing a hoax bomb, because he said it wasn't, but it was, but it wasn't. And he's like, no, I made a clock. And so for this web designer, whomever else, Glenn Beck, again, you know, my thoughts on Glenn Beck are, you know, very, you know, again, he's just pandering to a certain element. But I think you have to look at it, you know, overall, man. So it's a very slippery slope, man, because we're not encouraging all the things that we talk about that make America great, which is freedom and expression and those things. All we're doing now, man, is saying, hey, if you don't fit the stereotypical mold, whatever that is, whatever's in currently, then you're out. And I think we're going to miss a lot of things, man. And I think, you know, going back to your point, you know, setting goals and different things, you know, if you follow that logic, man, we may not create. We're going to miss the next Steve Jobs. You know, we're going to miss the next person that's going to create an Apple or Google or something, because they're not going to be able to have, they're not going to be able to express any ideas. And I just think it's a bad way to kind of progress, because if we start down that road, man, there's really no end, because then you're going to have to fit a certain mold. If you don't look a certain way, if you don't fit a certain whatever, then you're going to be discredited.
Well, you got kids in school. I got kids in school too, right? So would you say that you would rather on a Tuesday somebody bring something to school that is totally out of the box for that particular school at that particular time? Because there's nothing going on that would really warrant you bringing something to school like that at this point. And well, you haven't really talked to a teacher about it initially. You guys haven't really kind of, you know, came up with a game plan and you said, hey, I'm doing this. You just show up this day with it. I think that you would want educators to make sure that they're basically making sure that that's a safe environment for your child. I think that both of us would agree on that. So while we want to encourage kids to do things like that, I just think today in the world that we live in, there has to be a little bit more planning done so that it doesn't seem as though it's something that you're trying to, that there's any foul play involved.
I got you, man. I think that it's just, you know, again, we're taking away the spontaneity and the creativity of people, and we're saying that we're okay with that. And, you know, hey, man, I'm not really okay with it.
Yeah, but we're not doing that at all. I don't agree there at all. We're telling you to make sure that you communicate with your educators as to what you're building, how you're building it, and things like that. But that I don't think that at all says, hey, stop being creative at home. It just says watch what you bring to school, because we can't do a lot of the things. I can remember being a kid, and we used to bring stuff to school all the time, whether it be awards or, you know, little gadgets that we had, or, you know, little knives and stuff like that we would take to school. You can't do that anymore. I mean, you just can't do that anymore. I mean, schools do not allow you to have knives on premises. And I can remember distinctly trading with my friends different things. Hey, man, well, let me see your knife for a day, and I'll let you see my glasses for a day. You know, let me see this for a day. I'll let you see this for a day. We can't. It's unfortunate, but we just don't live in a society that allows us to do that anymore.
And I get that, but when you look at it, for the teachers and the educator, the principal to say, well, it looked like a bomb from TV. Think about what you just said. You're saying a prop. It looked like a prop, but the boy said, look at the clock. So a clock and a knife are two different things. So I think when you start talking about you need a good clearance and all this, it's a clock.
Yeah, but when you're talking about something that looks like a bomb, we haven't seen, they haven't allowed, I guess, everything to be released from the school. So that's what I'm saying. We kind of, you know, we're talking in the dark at the end of the day, because you haven't seen, I haven't seen it, what it actually looked like initially. And then we have people saying that it's not something that he even created to begin with. So, you know, I think it's just, it's sad we put that kind of flame out there, you know, and kind of, well, we put that spark out there and then we create that flame. But people don't really have all the information they need to make a informed argument or an informed decision on what they believe. And it's, you know, I really hate to see that done. And I think a lot of stuff like that is done when we're facing a lot of things, you know, from a political standpoint. You know, there are a lot of other things going on, but this is what's in the news. Do you see what I'm saying? So this is in the news. So what else more important is going on than this, you know, when this is probably at the end of the day, maybe just somebody doing something that, you know, they thought was creative. You know, it's sad that this is possibly just a cover-up just to keep, you know, something else out of the news.
You know, I've heard you say that before, man, and I just think, again, you know, it's we're heading down a real slippery slope when you start talking about people not being okay with this. I mean, again, it's a kid that said, I made a clock, and people are disputing it. Even truthfully, man, how many of us really have seen what a bomb looks like? Like, honestly, like, we've seen what we think we've seen on TV. Somebody put a prop in a Hollywood movie, but I've never seen a real bomb. I mean, I've never seen a picture
exactly.
of a real bomb.
So what you're saying is, if somebody walks in the door with something, you want to make sure that it's not a bomb. That's what you're saying, right?
What I'm saying is, if a student that is giving me no credence to think it's something other than what he said it is, then I'm thinking that I want to take him at his word, because I would want someone to trust my children or me.
I
say, hey,
I would rather you take it outside and talk to him about it. Well, won't you and him take it outside? I'm going to let you, in my kid's classroom, all right, I want you to take it outside in the yard and y'all talk about it outside. Now, in your kid's classroom, I want all the kids to gather around. And
right.
we try to figure
because
it out.
They've been going to school with him. They've been going to school with him. And he's
how many people? Yeah, but how many people have we seen that have committed mass murder that people say, well, I knew him. Wow, I can't believe he did that.
But
you know,
in actuality,
I'm not saying
I've never seen it. No, go ahead.
We've seen it on news a bunch of times where kids that they thought were just regular kids have turned around and killed somebody or, you know, done something they shouldn't have done. And, I mean, we just had a we had a professor come to school who, he was a nice guy. But he killed two people and himself. You know, so I'm not saying that this kid was going to do anything like that. I'm just saying that, you know, we got to take that precaution. And we go too far. Now, it was cool for Kim Davis to go to jail, okay, for not signing whatever. Now, we didn't want to hold up on that. And that's why when we look at situations like that, I say, hey, hold up on taking people to jail and arresting people. You know, and it would have worked in his favor as well. You know, if you talk to him a little bit more, find out what's going on, hey, okay, we get it. You know, there's no reason for him to be arrested. You know, I get that. There's no reason for him to be arrested. I 100% agree. But you're going to do it on one end, you got to do it on the other end, too. So so that's kind of the deal. Now, so what we got next up?
Man, changing gears totally, man. We can talk about something that's in the news, man, that's near and dear to your heart. Man, you love basketball. Man, did you see what was going on with Doc Rivers and Mark Cuban in their war of words?
I did. For those of you who don't know, during trading talks, DeAndre Jordan, who is a fantastic center for the Los Angeles Clippers, which I am a big fan of the Los Angeles Clippers, I was very, very concerned that we were going to lose DeAndre Jordan to the Dallas Mavericks. For those of you who don't know, the Dallas Mavericks, their owner is Mark Cuban. Seems like an awesome guy. I'm sure that a lot of NBA players want to go play for him. Had obviously had some talks with DeAndre Jordan, was very interested in bringing DeAndre Jordan over to the Dallas Mavericks. It was a done deal for the most part. I guess the only thing that had to be done was paperwork be signed. Well, at the last minute, the Clippers find out that DeAndre Jordan is unsatisfied with his, I guess more so with his teammates than anything else, over at the Clippers organization. He wasn't feeling that Chris Paul was really showing him the love. I don't know what the deal was. I watched a lot of Clippers games when I was living in Los Angeles. I went to a lot of Clippers games. I was very, very surprised that DeAndre felt like them. But anyway, this particular dispute just won't seem to die. What ended up happening was Doc Rivers was on a show and kind of said, hey, you know what, the way Mark Cuban acted after the trade didn't go through, you know, that was kind of shaky the way he acted. And then Mark Cuban, of course, fired back. So this is kind of like the saga that won't die. DeAndre Jordan ended up re-signing with the Clippers. So by DeAndre Jordan re-signing with the Clippers, of course, Mark Cuban was going to be kind of salty about that, which I can understand that. He was under the impression that DeAndre Jordan was going to be coming to the Dallas Mavericks. And at the last minute, the Clippers basically held DeAndre Jordan hostage and just said, look, man, we want you here, and we're going to stay here with you until, you know, the midnight hour, until you can only re-sign with us. And unless you just, you know, walk up out of here and leave, you know, we're basically here with you. So it was basically kind of word of words with Mark Cuban, who was the owner, and Doc Rivers, who was, of course, the coach of the Los Angeles Clippers. And it's not ugly, but it's just kind of like that saga they won't die, and I really wish people would let it go.
Well, I think the funny thing about it was they were, you know, again, most people that don't know, this was beginning of free agency, so DeAndre Jordan's contract with the Clippers was up. He's from Houston, so, the great thing about going to Dallas, although it's not his hometown of Houston, he's still closer to home, closer to family and friends, but he also pays no state income tax, so he saves a little money there. The thing about Mark Cuban that had people most enthralled was, one, how buddies on the Clippers, you know, Blake Griffin and some of the other guys talked to him and went to his house, and there was talk of them really kind of barricading themselves in the house and not letting Jordan go anywhere. Well, what was hilarious about it was they said when Mark Cuban found out that he acted like a jilted girlfriend. And so that's really what Doc was saying, which was like Mark Cuban's reaction was terrible. And so Mark says, oh, I didn't say anything, nobody was with me. But he had some type of app, and I think it's called Zap or something, and he made a bunch of tirades and talks about DeAndre Jordan and different things and how he wasn't really that good. If he couldn't take the heat of, you know, going back and forth through free agency, how was he going to be a cornerstone of the organization? And what Mark Cuban said today about Doc Rivers was that Doc was basically fighting for his professional career. And so Doc, being the general manager and the coach, if he lost DeAndre Jordan and his career would be over, he's going to be fired, blah, 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 blah. So I guess those that know Mark Cuban, you know, the NBA season is kind of getting upon us. So you've got a lot of people that are, you know, getting back into the swing of basketball. They're looking at their teams, trying to figure out what's going on. They're settling out to their teams. And in this particular case, Cuban, you know, being Cuban is saying what he's saying, and Doc is saying what he's saying. And to me, it's great banter because if you think about it, they're both teams from the West. So they will see each other, and they will be playing each other. So that's just another dimension that will be added to the series. So I think from that perspective, man, from an entertainment perspective, it's fantastic. You know, keep the trash talking going. Just make sure that the matchups back it up. So we'll see if Doc, you know, outcoaches the Mavs, and we'll see if the Mavs are able to have any answers for the Clippers. And they're no longer Live City. I think they're like Brick City or something now, right?
Oh, they're gonna still be Live City, brother. They got DeAndre and they got Blake Griffin. They're gonna still be Live City. That's all day long. So I'm really excited about the NBA season. It's going to be a lot of excitement around the Clippers, who is an organization who probably in the last 5 or 6 years has really started to develop their own following, their own kind of place in L.A. history, just because the Lakers have been so dominant, of course, over the years. But I hear Kobe's coming back. I think this is his last year, maybe. And so, you know, I'm not sure, you know, how – I don't know how good of shape he's going to be in and all that good stuff, but I can tell you right now, the Clippers will be good to go.
So, we're going to see. We're going to see.
Yeah, no, the Clippers will be good to go. They won't. I personally don't think the Mavericks will be able to do anything with the Clippers. The Clippers are going to be nice. They're going to be really, really nice. So I'm excited still. Really excited for them. So, all right, so switching gears now, going into politics. My man, Scott Walker. Wow. It's just amazing how things go from one end of the spectrum to the other. You know, you go from being a really, really hot candidate one minute to being, just really on the downside of things the next minute. It's kind of, you know, for politicians who, you know, they live their public life, it is amazing just, you know, how they take the ups and downs. I mean, you really got to admire, even if you don't like them for whatever reason. I mean, you really got to admire people's ability to bounce back, whether that be, you know, the president's ability to bounce back, or that be just any particular politician's ability to just, you know, just come out of any type of bad publicity and continue to move on. So we'll see how Scott Walker does. But for those of you who don't know Scott Walker, he's the 45th governor of Wisconsin, and he was first elected governor in 2010 in the general election. He actually survived a recall election and was reelected the governor back in 2014. He was born November 2nd, 1967, so he's only 47 years of age. Educated at Marquette University from 1986 to 1990, and I mean, he's really done some different things in this state. So you know, running for president I think was a tall task for him, but of course now he's out of the race. So what did you think about that, Q?
You know what, to be honest with you, man, I have not really gotten into the political swing of things. The only candidates that I've heard about really have been Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, Fiona, I think it's her name, Ben Carson, who not a fan of. But the thing about Scott Walker that I found ironic was that here's this guy from Wisconsin. You mentioned the fact that he was it was an attempt to recall him as governor. But, I mean, he's a guy that's out there. He went through a ton of money. I mean, I saw an article today, man, where he was he had been endorsed by the Cox brothers, and they basically, you know, the note in the New Yorker was that they had given him $900 million to run for president, and basically they told him they wanted his money back. They wanted their money back. They had spent almost $100 million. For him to have like 1% of the vote. So, you know, again, he seems like another candidate that, you know, I wonder what was he thinking and what was he doing? You know, what was his goal? You know, what was his end goal? You know, again, was he really trying to be president? Was he not? And I just think he's a candidate, man, that, you know, I don't think he was a very good governor. I thought a lot of the practices and things that he tried to stand for were to me, man, he reminded me of just another run-of-the-mill candidate that was trying to run and, you know, didn't really get the police, I mean, the public behind him, you know. So I'm kind of glad he's gone. I hope that the rest of them kind of bow out. And, you know, I wish that President Barack Obama could run again, man. I really do.
Yeah, I'm sure he do. Yeah, look, I hope. I'm looking forward to the election. Definitely looking forward to just hearing some new ideas and seeing, you know, what's out there. I think we've got too many politicians. We've just got too many politicians. We've really got to get some people who are up there fighting for the people, and not fighting for big government, but fighting for people. And so, you know, I'm hoping that this year we'll get some good ideas out there. I think there are some good ideas out there, but at the same time, we've got to be willing to listen. And you know, I mean, it just is what it is. All right. So this with Scott Walker. In 4 years before Scott Walker became governor, the state of Wisconsin had lost over 133,000 jobs. After reining in government spending, cutting taxes, and making fiscal reforms, his unemployment rate dropped from 8% to 4.5%. So he's really done some things there, and that's why he survives a lot of the recall elections. A lot of the recall elections, of course, have been about, you know, cutting back spending. And, I mean, that's what, you know, he's been able to do. He actually passed a budget that saved $30 million in the first fiscal year and $300 million over the course of 2 years. I think that was part of his, I think that was part of his appeal to Republicans, was his ability to, you know, convince others to cut spending. And, you know, even through those recall elections, as you can see, I mean, being that he survived those recall elections, you know, it must be that, people said, hey, you know what, yeah, you made some tough decisions and you made some people mad, but I think at the end of the day, they must have agreed with him to put him back in office. So I think that was part of his appeal. So he was really into creating more choices in the educational system. And so in 2012, he signed into law legislation that would mandate kindergartners' reading skills be evaluated as well as performance-based review of teachers. And, I mean, I can tell you one thing. I would 100%, you know, think that that's something that we need to be doing across the country, is making sure that our kindergartners, you know, are, of course, learning how to read and on pace to go to a first grade level, second grade level, third grade level, fourth grade level, fifth grade level. And then, of course, that, you know, we have teachers in place. You know, I'm not sure. That's kind of a catch-22 in terms of teachers and grading teachers, because I think if you've got a great teacher, sometimes you got a great parents too. The teachers can only, so many teachers' hands are tied. I've been in too many schools where teachers have not been able to do their job simply because they deal with too many behavior issues. So to grade a teacher and hold her pay based on that, when a lot of times all you allow her to do is babysit because you won't put the discipline in place that needs to be put in place in order for these students to be in an environment where they can thrive, I just don't see right now where you have a system where you could actually grade a teacher, because you're not putting that teacher in a position to be successful. So so he's done some great things within the state of Wisconsin. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if you can't continue to get voters to come aboard and to support you, people like the Koch brothers are not going to continue to bankroll your organization either. They're just not going to do it. I mean, they're looking for people who can actually win the general election. I mean, that's what they're looking for. So, you know, they're going to have to jump ship now, and I'm sure they'll be looking to support somebody. Not sure who they're going to support, being that, you know, Donald Trump is probably between Donald Trump, Ben Carson, and Carly Fiorina. You know, who knows how many more times that's going to change as far as the Republicans go. Whether or not, I don't know if the Bernie Sanders and the Hillary Clintons will be attracted to the Koch brothers simply because of the fact that, you know, that I just don't see their politics going in that direction. But, you know, we'll see at the end of the day. But hey, Scott Walker out of the race now, and so that's going to leave some openings for, you know, of course, Donald Trump, Carly Fiorina, and Ben Carson to really grab those supporters, grab a lot of his staff, of course, that was working for him, and try to get voters on board with them.
Andy, I'm with you, man. How many, do you know off the top of your head, how many candidates are currently on the Republican side that are running for president? Do you know? I know it's a very tough deal. I just don't know the number.
I really just keep track of the top contenders, which are going to be Donald Trump, Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina, and Jeb Bush. And from what I understand, Jeb Bush is really hanging on by the skin of his teeth. So, you know, those four are really the only ones that I really just track. The rest of the guys, unless they do something to really, you know, put themselves out there, I just don't. It's going to be a tough goal for them to win right now.
Gotcha. Yeah, I my political views are generally a little more left leaning. You know, a little more open minded. Some things very conservative. Most things, you know, pretty liberal. But I do think it's cool from the political sense to, you know, be looking at things and to. You know, kind of watch the game of politics. And I think a lot of people forget that it truly is a game. You know, a lot of people don't look at it that way. And again, with this guy, Scott Walker, you know, he wasn't able to galvanize. And I think it's probably a lot of people probably like me, where they are there's so many people that they all look like caricatures. They all look like cutouts. You know, none of them look real because it's so many of them. You know, it's kind of hard sometimes to hear the message because it's just so many of the same of what it appears. You know.
I'm moving on from career politicians. Because I just think when you look at the lobbyist, when you look at it, and when people talk about him, and when I read the article about him, and they were talking about the fact that, and this is how the article put it, the Koch brothers purchased Scott Walker earlier this year. You know what I'm saying? That's crazy. How can someone be working in your best interest or my best interest when they're really working in the best interest of their donors, and that's it? So I'm over career politicians. I'm really looking for some new people to step in and really show us a new way, and because that's what you're there for. You're really to do the will of the people, which a lot of times I've seen things pushed through, especially with this administration, where you know, we've pushed things through that we wanted that the administration wanted to get accomplished, which wasn't necessarily the will of the people. And so I really hope that we can get back to, you know, you're a representative. You know, at the end of the day, that's what you are. You're supposed to represent the people. And you're supposed to do the things that they want you to do, that the majority of the people want you to do. And I want us to get back to that. And right now, I just don't see us. I really don't see us being there right now.
Hey, I'm with you, man. I think that that sounds good, but I think that with a lot of the campaign reform and things that are going on, you know, with the amount of money that's being, you know, granted to these candidates, it does make you feel like, you know, they're being purchased because, you know, somebody gives you $100 million to spend. I mean, they have some interest in that aside from, hey, I just think you're a great guy. And I just think, again, man, it's a weird time overall. You know, I think when you look at a lot of the candidates, you know, some of them, you know, I look at Trump, you know, the politics and things and policies and the way in which he's speaking reminds me that he seems like he's about 50 years too late. And I think that he is a different
Donald Trump
politician.
Does.
Yeah, he does. He sounds like just an old, bitter person that wants to talk about, you know, their glory days, you know, when things were a certain way. And I think the country's evolved and moved on from that, you know, and I think that you're right. I think we're looking for people. It's funny that you say you're not looking for career politicians, but, you know, President Obama was a true outsider. I mean, he's a person that came in and didn't have those allegiances that a lot of the current politicians have. And, you know, people scorn him for that. You know, they don't look at it. You know, they want to ridicule him and say, well, he was just a community organizer. What did he do? Well, he was a non-politician. And he's done great things. But, you know,
well,
looking for that,
he
then they want to work on that.
Well, I voted for President Obama in 2008. I voted for President Obama. So, absolutely, I'm like I said, I am open-minded. I'm surely open-minded. I'm willing to give people the opportunity. But you can't get in there and become the person that you said you're not. So that's where that kind of went. And I'm going to grade you on your performance. I could care less what's coming out of your mouth. I don't pay attention to what comes out of people's mouths. I pay attention to what they do. And you've got to do things that support the things that you talk about. And so, you know, that's where, you know, I get a disconnect with a lot of people because I see through it. It's no, you're not selling me. What are you doing? You're not selling me. I'm watching your actions. And, you know, that sales pitch sounded fantastic. But at the same time, you know, that car that you sold me, I got into it and I drove it. And you know what? It didn't have the CD player that you promised it was going to have. You know, it didn't have cruise control. So here I am now riding down the street in something that you sold me. And there's nothing in here that you said was going to be in here. So that's kind of where I'm going to, I don't care who you are at the end of the day. I'm going to let you know what I think about you. I'm a grown man. And so when it comes to these politicians, whether they be Democrats or Republicans on my team or not, I'm going to tell them what I think about them. And at the end of the day, I'm going to tell them whether I agree with what they're doing or not. I've agreed with some of the things that President Obama has done. I've disagreed with some of the things that he's done. But at the same time, I'm always willing to listen to people. And, you know, I'm not going to, you know, of course, just dismiss him because his idea of things are different than some of the ideas that I have. I don't dismiss it, but I know when we're creating dependent people. I know that. I know when we're creating dependent people. And so I really would like to see people be able to believe in themselves again. We've got to. I would not, you know, there's no way I would teach my kids to depend on someone else. I want you to depend on yourself first of all. And we've gotten away from that. It's big government has told us, depend on us. We'll take care of you. And that's, you know, that's just not what I'm into. It's not what I teach the kids that I mentor. It's not what I teach my kids. I mean, I want them to be able to grow, and I want them to be able to learn things, and I want them to, you know, just, hey, you know, sometimes have to go through tough times in order to become the person that they need to be. And it's just an unnecessary evil. But now we're on to some other stuff. But as we talked about, you know, we talked about Donald Trump. You know, of course, you know, he was ridiculed because someone stood up at one of his rallies and said some things about the president. And Donald Trump didn't defend the president. And so, of course, he took flack and he said, this is the first time that I've ever gotten in trouble for something I didn't say. And the expectation of Donald Trump to defend the president would be, you know, it's like you asking a gang member from a rival gang to defend, you know, a rival gang member's name. It's just not going to happen. I don't think at the end of the day the president would defend Donald Trump, and I wouldn't expect them to, simply because of the fact that I know they don't see eye to eye. So I thought that expectation was a little bit much. But, of course, hey, 24-hour news cycle, you got to find something right.
But yeah, I think with regard to this one, what people were looking for would be if Trump is really a viable presidential candidate, then people are looking for him to correct something that is grossly in error. And I think that's where people had issue with it, not that, oh, Trump should have said something. I think they were saying, like, look, man, you know that this is wrong. But the truth of Trump, man, when I look at Trump from a political perspective, what I see is him stirring the pot. And I see him doing what I hear a lot of people say that they think President Obama is doing, which is, you know, he appears, man, to speak his mind from a standpoint of a middle-aged, and when I say middle-aged, I'm talking about 60-plus, older, wealthy, you know, Caucasian gentleman. And it appears that,
you know,
I read some
articles. Hey, Q, just so you know, the older we get, the higher that middle-aged number needs to be. You know what I'm saying? So
I'm with
like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, middle-aged next year should be, like, 70-ish.
I'm with you, man. And he may be 70. That's the thing. I read an article, man, about Donald Trump, man. He grew up in Queens, man, in Jamaica State. His father was actually a developer that built the neighborhood. And, you know, people talked about how diverse Queens is. It's like one of the most diverse – it's actually the most diverse borough in New York. The problem I see with Trump is that I'm not sure that he represents all of America. He represents a certain segment. And I think what I hear you and what I hear others say is that although Trump represents he represents the people, well, no, I think what he does is he represents a certain demographic and a certain segment, and I believe that demographic is very small. I think Trump is saying what a lot of people feel and will say at home, and I don't know that a president should say everything that people say at home, because a president, in essence, is supposed to be bigger than that, because he's supposed to be a leader, and a leader can't say just what's on his mind, just to feel as though he can speak clearly or frankly. And so I just think, again, man, when I listen to Trump, when I listen to some of the other politicians, you know, I personally am looking for a little bit more.
I don't know which candidate I'm going to go with. I know that there's a certain party that I lean toward. But as far as a given candidate, I have not made up my decision yet. I think it's still a little far out to start looking at it. I'm going to listen and kind of observe some things for a while. But I definitely think it's something that, you know, it's great to hear people, you know, voicing their opinion. And I think that the best way, the very high level, to make the country better is to discuss things that are the rights and wrongs of our country and not be afraid to discuss those things. And I think a lot of people are afraid to discuss them because we are in such a PC world. And I'm not saying that you can't have the hard, frank conversations. But what I am saying is that when you have those conversations, they've got to be in the context of everyone. You know, we go back to Muhammad, I mean, if you think about it, man, would that have happened to, you know, a kid with blonde hair and blue eyes? Most people don't feel that way. And that's when people hear the politics and things of Trump, that doesn't necessarily reflect what people feel is a brown society. And so I just think, man, we've got to kind of step back from some of that and really start looking at what are we trying to accomplish. And so I think, you know, again, Trump, when I look at him from a political standpoint, he makes me wonder because he is a guy that is, you know, overly wealthy and has always been about self. And so I'm not sure that he's really as selfless as he's talking about. And the other thing that I wonder about.
Well, let me ask you this. So why do you say he's always been about self? Because, I mean, because when you talk about I'm just saying at the end of the day, for someone to create a business and to employ thousands of people, I think that at the end of the day, it's not his job to give away every dollar that he earns. That's not why he went into business. But, excuse me, but to be able to allow people to make a living, I think that's a pretty good thing. I mean, that's a pretty good thing. What he does with his money and what he donates, I don't know. But, I mean, I would venture to say I bet he donates more than you and I put together every year.
Well, I think that I'm not disputing that part of it. What I am disputing is that I don't think that you can have a guy who has gone and filed for bankruptcy leading the country.
He's never personally filed for bankruptcy. His business is
the company that he runs. Companies that he runs have filed for bankruptcy.
Okay.
I don't think that qualifies him to run the country because we don't want the country filing for bankruptcy. So someone that has made those mistakes, I don't think he qualifies. No, it's not.
I mean, we're already. So, I mean, I think that him having run several successful businesses and then having businesses that maybe didn't make it, I think really gives him a really good view of everything. Because he can tell you, hey, these are the 5-10 businesses that I run that have been successful. Let me tell you what's made those work. Here go the 3 or 4 businesses that ended up filing bankruptcy. Let me tell you why they didn't work. To me, I think at the end of the day, that really keeps you well-rounded.
See, I would agree with you, but I can't because I think when I look at Trump,
you can't agree with me because you have a D behind your name. Pretty much.
Wow.
Hey, this is about the truth, sir. Hey, this is about the truth. Okay? We're going to get the truth out tonight. That's what we're going to do.
And that's what we're doing, man. I just think, again, that Donald Trump is not the guy to lead the free world. I think Donald Trump is the guy to have a party with. Donald Trump is a guy that to get advice regarding real estate investments. I don't see him as a person qualified to lead and do the thing that, you know, people are envisioning him doing. So in that regard, I'm gonna tell Trump to kick rocks.
Oh,
I'm waiting on him to bow out.
So now on to your second favorite person, Ben Carson. I know you like Ben Carson a lot. And I know you expressed that, you know, hey, you were willing to vote for him tomorrow, right? Can you tell us a little bit about why it is that you're so fired up about Ben Carson.
Man, I think that Ben Carson, if I could, you know, I'm a nonviolent guy, but that Ben Carson, man, he takes me to a whole nother place. He makes me really, man, for lack of a better way of saying it, man, he's a terrible candidate, man. I mean, he may be a great neuroscientist, but that doesn't make him a good presidential candidate. That just means that if I have conjoined twins, he's the guy I'm gonna call. Other than that, he's not qualified to really do much of anything. He actually seems like a bunch of a dimwit, to be honest with you.
He seems like he what?
He seems like a dimwit, a very unintelligent person.
That's very, very interesting. I've noticed that a lot of, I don't know why this is. We seem to demonize our very successful African-American brothers and sisters who choose to think more conservatively. And I just think that's sad because at the end of the day, what we do is we don't allow ourselves to get the knowledge that they have to get to the point that they've gotten to. And I deal with, you know, I deal with quite a few, and I never forget the guy that bought a car for me. And when he purchased the car, it was obvious that this guy was just, he purchased a car, I believe, for his son or something like that. It was a Chevy Malibu, if I'm not mistaken. And it was just well below his means. And when I talked to him and got to talking to him a little bit further, I ended up delivering the car for him for some reason. And this guy was like, you know what, I come from a generation of conservatives. And you could see it in everything that he did. This guy was really he was a stand-up guy. He did everything he told me he was going to do from day one. And he was just a good dude. But people wouldn't listen to him. People wouldn't give him the time of the day simply because of the fact that he was a Republican. And he just flat out told me he was a Republican. I'm more conservative. I wouldn't call myself a Republican, but I'm more conservative on a lot of things, just because I'm small government, man. I'm small government. It's just, it is what it is. I think that one of the biggest disagreements I think I probably have with most Republicans is on education. And just how we've got to figure out a way that the government can help in education, but we don't lose so many resources at the higher administrative levels, and that money makes it down to assist our kids. That's where I probably have the biggest disagreement. I want to get more of that money down to the kid that needs it rather than having it used up at, you know, a lot of the administrative levels.
I'm with you.
Say again?
I said, I agree with you. I'm with you on that, man. I think that's a great point.
Well, I know it's a great point. That's why I just made it. You know what? You say some of the, you got to think sometime before you say stuff. Huh?
Yes, says the guy that thinks Ben Carson is a viable candidate.
Right. Oh, man, I can't believe you heard that. All right, so now on to your girl, Hillary Clinton. Now, how you say that you would vote for Ben Carson and then cross over and say, hey, I'd also vote for Hillary Clinton. Talk to us about that.
You know what? I think Hillary is a very knowledgeable woman. She's never been I've never been that overly high with her on her, I guess, as a candidate in the past. But I do think that she is a person that knows politics, knows how to maneuver. She's very adept at getting things done. I think she's been around and been a good person for the last 20 years. I think her husband had a great presidency. I think that she helped him a lot, and I think she'd be an asset to the country. I think she's more of a giving person than is Trump. And the thing is, I'm not anti-business. See, I'm very pro-business.
I just think that you can't steal everything. Like, you've got to leave something for the people. And when I think of Trump,
let me ask you this.
Trump's going to get
did you say something about did you say something about Hillary sent you an email recently?
So that's the question I have for you, man. And what is the deal with everyone wanting her emails? What is the big doggone deal? What does she do?
You know, I don't know what the big deal is. Could be dealing with national security. I don't know how you're the Secretary of State, but you don't receive classified emails? Okay. That makes sense.
She said she...
It's unfortunate, man. That is a... hand in the cookie jar. That's just a hand in the cookie jar case right there where you make a statement and you don't realize what you're saying and you say, hey, you know what, I just had it set up simply because of the fact I thought it would be easier. You know, come on. I mean, really? I mean, I don't blame. But one thing about me is that like I told you, I'm fair. I don't necessarily blame Hillary Clinton. I blame whoever her superiors are, which would be the White House. I would blame them that they don't make high-level officials like that have government email addresses. Are you serious? You just going to send her an email at HillaryClinton@yahoo.com? So,
is that what transpired?
Go ahead.
Is that what transpired, or is that just kind of what's alleged? That, you know, is that a conspiracy theory out there?
Oh, no, that's not the conspiracy theory. I want to say her email address was, I don't know, something like Hillary at maybe Clinton.com. They had their own server, man, which is, you know, it's not uncommon, they say, in Washington. But like I'm saying, I'm not blaming Hillary for that. I'm blaming basically the White House for not making it mandatory that she has a government email address. And that we know that the security of her emails is locked tight. I mean, it's got to be locked tight, brother. I mean, she should be getting information on, you know, terrorist activities and everything else. But it sounds to me like there were some additional things going on. And I mean, just the look of. It looked bad. It looked really, really bad. Just to me on the outside looking in. I'm telling you, Q, I haven't, you know, there are people that I'm not as likely to side with just because I'm more conservative. So if you come out and your policies are more liberal on a lot of different things, then I'm not as likely to side with you, but I will listen to you, and I have not said, hey, you know what, you're not going to get my vote. That's not the way I operate. I'm an idea guy. Like, I want to hear your ideas. And, you know, I work with people that I didn't necessarily, you know, get along with, but I'm going to listen to your ideas because at the end of the day, it's about making everything work. That's what we want to do. We want to make everything work, and we want to just put ourselves in a position to be successful. So I wouldn't deny Hillary Clinton my vote, but what I tell you is that at the end of the day, that looked bad. It just really, really looked bad. It didn't make sense. And when you start doing stuff that doesn't make sense, like I'm not taking a sales pitch. I'm just not taking a sales pitch. It doesn't make sense. Why would you have a separate email, you know, when, you know, at the end of the day, you know good and well that just is not going to fly. That was a bad call. But it's a lot easier to ask. It's a lot easier to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission.
So, again, you're saying that Hillary had a separate email account and that's your issue with not wanting to vote for?
Say it again?
So your issue with Hillary is that she had a separate email address and that's why you don't want to vote for?
Oh, no. I'm saying that she had a separate email address and it looks as though she was trying to hide some things. I don't know what she was trying to hide, and I'd like to know that. We're talking about business dealings. We're talking about someone who is internationally known, who is taking money from other countries for her foundation, and then turn around and making policy that could put other countries in a better situation to deal with the United States. I got a problem with that, brother. Major problem with that.
Do you?
You have a foundation. You have Hillary Clinton had a foundation that was basically getting money from other countries for all types of things. Now, you know, speaking fees or whatever the case may be, but when you boil down, those monies were coming in because these people are understanding that Hillary Clinton is going to run for office, and they want influence. So they're giving her money not because they love her speaking style. They're giving her money simply because of the fact they know she's going to be running for office. And if she gets in, they want to have some type of influence there, and they want to have a voice. They want to have someone that they can call. And if she's been paid $200,000, $300,000, $1 million for whatever, then of course you're going to take that phone call. It's the same thing that Donald Trump said when he was up there speaking. Hey, I gave money to this person, gave money to that person. Matter of fact, he gave money to Hillary Clinton, and then when he called her and said, "Hey, I need you to come to my wedding," she was there. So
actually,
I mean,
he gave the money to Jeb Bush.
Say again?
He gave the money to Jeb Bush.
He gave money to Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush. And probably
he was upset that Jeb was there. Well, he was upset that Jeb wouldn't okay gambling in Florida. And
yeah,
he said Donald Trump
said about. We were talking about the Hillary situation. Right?
I'm just
so
saying,
you asked
like
me why I had a problem.
Seems like politics as usual to me, though.
Exactly, and that's where the problem is, and that's why I told you. That's exactly why I said what I said, which is I'm really sick of the career politicians, and I really want to see somebody else in there. Of course, you know the downside is you get somebody new in there; they don't quite know everything that's going on. So, and then that creates a problem in itself, but. I just want to see somebody else come in, man, and try to do something new, you know. And I think that's why Donald Trump scares people. He's not funded by anybody, and by him not being funded by anybody, I don't have to worry about, you know, I have to worry about other things like him not really understanding how to get bills passed and, you know, how to get people on the side. But then again, he kind of does know how to do stuff like that. You know, in terms of negotiating, he seems to be a pretty darn good negotiator. So, I mean, people have strengths. And for us to kind of deny that they have those strengths based on their party affiliation, it's kind of disingenuous, right? You know, for us to deny that Donald Trump is a good businessman, is good at running things. Now, the government, on the other hand, is not a business, but it can be run better than what is being run.
I think again, Donald is the Donald. Donald is out for self. Donald is not out to make the country better.
But for Donald to be out for self, okay, what that says to me is he's probably going to govern less. I'm interested in people being responsible for self, and I think we've gotten away from that. That nothing is ever my fault. Nothing is ever my fault. It's always somebody else's fault. And if we keep passing that on, what type of generation are we really raising? Well, what type of generation are we raising if we're raising a generation that always says, hey, nothing is your fault. It's always someone else's fault. We need someone else to do something to get it right for you.
I hear you, man. I don't know, man. I hear you.
You know how we do it, man. We go back and forth, but you know what? At the end of the day, we got each other's back, you know. And so, you know, we've just got to help the world get to that point where, you know, hey, we're going to go back and forth, but at the end of the day, we got each other's back. You see what I'm saying?
Right. No, you're right, man. You definitely are, man. Definitely are.
So we got to get it, man. We're going to help the world get it there one night shift at a time.
That's it, brother. That's it.
So that's it, man. So, hey, man, I want to thank everybody who listened in this evening. I'm sure that y'all probably at home watching Empire, Cookie doing what she doing. Terrence Howard? That's his name, right? Terrence Howard,
yeah.
Right?
Terrence Howard, uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank for some reason. I noticed this dude is, he cool as a fan. He's one of my favorite actors, and he's off the chain. I'm just drawing a blank right now. I ran into him when I was living in L.A. He lived in one of the buildings that I used to go to from time to time. And I ran into him on the elevator one time, man. He was cool as a fan, too. So anyway, man, I wish that show the best of the luck, and I hope that a lot of people tuning in, man. So we're going to call it a night here on a night shift. We're going to look forward to talking to you guys next week. We're trying to come up with some interesting titles, some interesting discussions. So if you guys got anything that you'd like to discuss, please feel free to hit us up on Facebook. We're out there. So we look forward to talk to you guys.
Hey, man, just wanted to tell everybody, man, keep keeping on, set those goals, and let's reach and continue to achieve.
Absolutely, brother, and we'll catch you all right here next week on the night shift.